Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Mad Jin. With guest co-host,
the Grumpy Buddha.
I think Kyle was trying to thank us for something, actually.
I'm completely thanking you for inviting me to this thing. You kids with your podcasts and your laptops and stuff, this is good times.
You know what's sad is I'm past the point where being called a kid is insulting, and I just wish I were.
I'm Dan Q, and I'm joined by Makalua.
Coffee. What? Is it a resource in Beyond Earth?
Maybe with a mod. The Mian Team.
Cafe the Mian Team.
Which will probably get shut down for health violations, imagine.
I'm just going to be in the corner.
As opposed to out in the open. And our guest, the Grumpy Buddha.
Thank you.
Termination of specimen advised.
Exactly.
What?
No, that's perfectly normal. No,
somebody's bringing their own audio clips.
I noticed that.
If you played Alpha Centauri, you may recognize that. If you haven't, then that was just weird.
Well, obviously Mackie's never played Alpha Centauri, so that's all good.
Yeah.
I don't know if the weirdness and the having or having not played Alpha Centauri is mutually exclusive, but I gotta say, for someone called the Grumpy Buddha, when you thank me, talk about false advertising.
Sometimes I'm grumpy, sometimes I'm a little bit more on the Buddha side, so, you know.
That's true.
I'll try to be grumpier.
Probably gonna have to wait to be grumpier, because we're about to talk about Civilization Beyond Earth, and I don't think you're gonna be able to fake being grumpy about that, at least not effectively.
I'll try. Probably not.
For episode 204 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Mad Jin, and Bruno Prado Santos.
Email was from Sajak? I don't know.
I think so.
Yes. Who is from Holland, and he questioned, how much of an impact do the factions have on your games, and are we still using cities or something else like space stations?
Let's all go space stations.
Okay, let's go with the second question first. It's similar, but not exact to cities. It's more than just a name change, right? Because it's now an outpost instead of a city, but they're not immediately founded, but gradually, rather, over a number of turns.
I think from a strategy standpoint, though, you're still going to treat them as cities by and large.
Yeah, if you plant it, you want to keep it.
And I think it will function very similarly to how the Civ 5 cities function, with some changes, of course, but yeah. It's still a focal point in your gameplay.
As for the impact the factions have on your game, from what I've been able to gather, it seems to be a blend of how the faction from Alpha Centauri were and civilizations from Civ 5. Like, they have dispositions towards certain approaches to gameplay, that is, victory conditions, but they do not preferably gravitate towards one type of gameplay or another, unlike in Alpha Centauri.
Some flexibility required.
Instead of some assembly required?
Yeah.
Some flexibility required. Oh, okay.
Well, there's some assembly required, too. I mean, how else are you going to nuke somebody? You have to build them.
Yep, true.
Yeah, huh.
That's all Phil's going to do. He's going to go supremacy, he's going to turn himself into a robot, and then nuke everybody.
And if radiation doesn't bother me, I'll face.
Previews of Beyond Earth that came from Gamescom 2014.
Dennis, which building would you recommend for us as a starting build?
Well, either the clinic or the Old Earth Relic is a good option. The Old Earth Relic is going to give you more culture to unlock virtues.
I've seen a bunch of the previews, and some of them have been a little bit random and not really giving the kind of detail that the veteran players are really looking for. I heard one description of it was half an hour of basically saying it's a turn-based game played in turns. But there's been a lot of cool stuff out with regard to the tech web. There were comments that it doesn't look alien enough, but there were just some videos with the fungal biome where everything looks kind of purple and cool.
Coming to you from Germany, Civilization Beyond Earth, Will Miller is co-lead designer.
Co-lead designer, that's right. So we've just landed on the new world here, and we're seeing what we call the fungal biome, and this is one of the things we're showing off at Gamescom this year. One of the, I guess, most alien of the three environmental types we have. We've seen the lush environment, which is kind of like Pandora from Avatar. We've seen the arid environment, which looks a lot like something out of Frank Herbert's Dune. And this is totally alien. Lots of weird flora and fauna, strange tubers and fungus everywhere. It looks really cool, and we're glad to finally get to show it.
There are a lot of comparisons to Alpha Centauri, obviously. If you bring up the old Let's Plays on YouTube of Alpha Centauri, there's green for the jungles, and it's kind of a Mars red. And, of course, this was 15 years ago, but the terrain and everything looks pretty cool. And I have to say that it's maybe using the old Civ 5 engine, but I'm excited about it. We're definitely seeing some changes over Civ 5, in my opinion. With the aliens, one video, you know, I want to emphasize that these are not raging barbarians, unless you want to make them raging barbarians, in which case they're probably going to rage even harder. This guy was playing it on the second lowest difficulty level, and just one soldier against one random alien spin was not a walkover. Whereas opposed in Civ 5, if you're playing on Chieftain or Warlord or whatever it is, your warrior runs into a barb, you're running over in a couple of turns and just moving on. That is not the case in Beyond Earth. Also, apparently, they will not attack you if you don't attack them and you don't get too close to their little hives. They will heal in their spooky miasma, which is, of course, something that barbarians do not do in Civ 5. And so they kind of advertise this as alien presence is going to be much more than just a nuisance. It was very clear from just the limited amount of gameplay we saw that that is the case. And they also said that what other factions do will impact how the aliens react to you. So if everybody else in the world is getting rid of the alien nests, they're probably not going to like you too much either because, you know, humanity is dumb and you're clearly part of Team Human. So I'm interested in that, and I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do for the first time I play. Am I going to go just crush the aliens and mine their bodies for science, or go with a touchy-feely hug-the-alien plan? I'm not sure yet.
So you're trying to decide between Faction Phil and Faction Mackey, respectively.
Supremacy for wins.
I'm sure I don't know. Hugging the aliens probably means that, from what the spoilers say, down the line you'll be like building Godzilla and you'll be dropping miasma on enemy factions. And that sounds kind of cool, I have to say.
See, what you don't understand is I have a microchip and a stapler. And regardless of what you say now, you will agree with me later.
Someone who nerve stapled too much in Alpha Centauri, I see.
I don't know what you're talking about. And neither do they.
I'm pretty sure that's in Phil's psych report. Nerve stapled too much in Centauri.
How is that possible? How could you nerve staple too much? I don't know.
He was nerve stapled as a child.
The Grumpy Buddha mentioned the affinities, of course, and we've already mentioned supremacy and harmony, but there's also purity.
The virtue system, which is kind of like social policies from Civ 5, we've added a key feature here that's really important. In old Civ, it was sort of the critical path to specialize in one of these trees and not deviate. But we've added these things called synergy bonuses, which give you special abilities if you go horizontally or vertically. And this lets you multiclass if you wish. So you can have a lot more flexibility inside this system, which kind of crafts your governmental type as you move forward in the game.
From some of these videos, there was the general comment as well that, you know, there really wasn't a lot of gameplay going on here. There was a lot of introductory stuff for people that haven't following the game since it was announced in April. Really, Gamescom, the coverage of Beyond Earth is not really for hardcore Civ fanatics like us.
Or anybody has heard of the word Civ.
So what you end up having to do is you have to data mine beyond what people are saying and maybe in spite of what people are saying. Take screenshots of videos and then zoom in and analyze and make certain you choose the high quality version, archived version, so you can actually figure some stuff out.
There's a variety of stuff that people on CFC actually picked up because these people are good at doing this sort of thing. Like all the spy related stuff, somebody actually stopped, checked, saw that you can do a national securities project for your spies if you have spies somewhere.
Oh, yeah, that was a Good Samaritan.
Yeah.
Yeah, he also saw that the operations in foreign cities with difficulty and required infiltration level seen in the screen, establish networks, siphon energy, steal science.
And steal tech.
It's been a while since we've seen that one.
Yes, and steal technology. However, it was confirmed in a live stream from Firaxis Games that came a little bit before this that you cannot trade technologies, but you can steal them.
You can borrow.
One thing I liked that when they went through the virtues, which were, I think, might, prosperity, knowledge, and industry is that, as all of us veteran players know, that the honor tree in Civ 5 is, shall we say, a tad underpowered. And I think that one thing they did to roughly equivalent tree with Might, relatively early on in the Might tree, every alien you kill, you harvest its body for science, and you get 100% of its toughness as beakers. That seems appealing to me, which is why I'm thinking of nice purity harvesting run for my first play. What could possibly be unethical about killing aliens and harvesting their bodies for knowledge? Nothing. Nothing at all.
Nothing at all. You are actually making the lives of your people better, and therefore it is ethical outright, of course.
AWES also got confirmed, again, jumping a little bit ahead to the live stream from Firaxis Games, since Kyle mentioned, that's the Grumpy Buddha, by the way, the virtues, and you're able to mix and match the perks from the various virtue trees, and of course, they do replace social policies. Some more data mining from the nuanced things, such as Arioch IV notes that Derelict Settlement is a new target for explorer expeditions, and the green bug resource is chitin, and the thistle-looking resource is fiber. I mean, these kind of details are not going to be noticed by people at Gamescom, and by people at Gamescom, I mean people who are presenting. Even if they did notice it on screen, they're not going to bother to mention that, because those are the kind of nitty-gritty things that we Civ fanatics really like to delve into. So I think, quite honestly, more than particular concrete details from Gamescom, it's about the eye candy, because there was a lot to see, although not as lot to see as was seen in the Firaxis livestream.
First live stream of Civilization Beyond Earth. My name is Pete Murray. I'm here at Firaxis Games, and with me in the studio is our producer, Kevin Schultz. On behalf of the Beyond Earth team, thank you for joining us. We're really excited to be able to show off the game today.
About 35 turns or so. Like, guys, can you do a little more than 35? That doesn't show us a lot. I know, I'm so ungrateful.
I should mention that the version of the game we're using, it's a couple weeks old at this point, and the team is working hard, and the game is looking really, really fantastic. But this build was created shortly after our beta.
Started off by attacking the aliens immediately and trying to wipe out their nests, which, of course, we were just talking about, made the rest of the native life kind of restless.
When we created our expedition, I chose to bring a weapons cache, which has started me with this marine unit. And we have to choose production in our first city. And because we are here to make a lasting impression on the wildlife of this planet, we're going to build another soldier. And there's our first alien nest. Okay, we can clear that out if we need to. That's probably what will make our first short-term objective. And the aliens are coming out swinging at us. If I were to treat this sea dragon like a, barbarian boat, I would go ahead and shoot that without remorse. Another wolf beetle unit's come down and joined. That wolf beetle unit's retreated back to the nest. Go ahead and take this opportunity to bring the Marines in.
What was missing from that, but I'm sure it happens, is that he was saying that you make the natives restless enough, and eventually a bunch of siege worms get attracted, and they're as big as a tile. They just move through your spots and destroy everything. And it sounds like, at least in early game, they're almost impossible to kill. I would have loved to see that in the stream, and I'm hoping that we see something like that in one of the future streams.
I can't wait to troll multiplayer games by making the aliens constantly hostile everybody
totally
as soon
knew
as possible.
The troll was going to say that.
Sea troops for everyone!
I'm just trying to optimize my position, guys.
So right now, this feels pretty good, right? You know, I'm kind of whacking on these wolf beetles, and I'm getting some experience for it and getting some veterancy. I brought another unit online. We'll bring him over and have him start helping out. We're going to go ahead and we're going to clear this nest. So we've destroyed a teeming alien nest and recovered 40 energy from it in the form of volatile hydrocarbons, I presume. Oh, I got a quest decision. Okay, the indigenous species of these planets may pose a threat to our growth. I agree. Though we cannot determine their intelligence, their hostility has been documented. Moving forward, we must decide how to deal with them. Do we attempt to domesticate the local wildlife or exterminate them? We are going to eradicate the wildlife because we came here to make the world safe for humanity, not raise cattle. Icon color right here. Previously, when we were running into them, the alien was black shield with a kind of a green icon. And now what we're seeing is that this is actually an orangey color. This means that the aliens are becoming more aggressive towards us.
Pretty military focused on that, so I don't think you saw a lot other than pew pew.
Yeah, it wasn't until the second portion, which was of the go, that Pete Murray, Firaxis' marketing associate, he took a different approach with the alien and tries not to antagonize them.
All right, so I've restarted our game. We are right back where we were the first time around. We're going to take a different approach to it this time. All right, there's that alien hive. If this goes the way it did last game, which we have every reason to believe it should, the aliens will come out and attack us, but this time I'll show what happens when you take a softer step towards the aliens. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to move away from the nest. And notice this time the aliens didn't follow up on us. There's that wolf beetle from earlier. Now our marine is next to him. Wolf beetles are going to perceive marines and explorers as different levels of threat. Let's see if he attacks our marine. Notice that that wolf beetle didn't automatically attack our marine. It kind of retreated, and the reason is we haven't antagonized the aliens this time. We haven't gotten into a fight that we could have survived, but, you know, wouldn't have done us any favors. So they're definitely not barbarians. It's hard to think of a barbarian unit in Civ that would have backed off from an opportunity like that.
I don't think it got as much screen time as the antagonizing, probably because in an early game, it was probably more fun to watch.
Yeah, I was going
to
say,
derp around.
An early game not antagonizing is kind of boring to watch.
It did demonstrate that aliens, if you haven't antagonized them, they'll just kind of check you out and then they'll just walk away, which is boring on the one hand. But on the other hand, 100 turns, 200 turns from then offer, you know, if you're a Harmony player, I think that's the kind of tactic you got to have to use at the start.
Eh, kill them all.
I'm kind of with you, but not sure yet.
I can be harmonious with your dead body.
That I've mined for science.
The word choice is amazing.
I know.
We're really excited about live streaming Beyond Earth for the first time. We're going to do more of these live streams of Beyond Earth later on. We'll start to dive into some different systems aside from the aliens. And I hope you guys are as excited about Beyond Earth coming out as we are.
So what do you guys think of that interview with Dennis Schur,
Fraxis producer on Beyond Earth?
Many players would like to just spam the continents with their own cities with no check to growth.
Yes.
Where do you take the courage from to introduce checks and balances into the game to stop players from doing their own thing, to stop players from experiencing total freedom? How do you justify that?
It's funny, this debate's been going on since 2010 when we released Civilization V. And we all know the reasons we use the happiness mechanic, just to kind of keep the balance of wide versus tall. What we found when we didn't have as much of a check on happiness, especially when we released Civilization V at Street, was that players formed the perfect grid pattern to cities to be able to put size 1 cities all over the map, perfect spaces apart, so that they could just cover the earth with cities and never quite have a rubber band put on to stop them from doing it. And it was a disadvantage to the AI, it's a disadvantage in multiplayer, and there was a lot of things that just kind of hindered the gameplay. So that was the main reason why we put that in. You can still play wide. You can play actually really wide, but you really have to be careful with how you do it. We didn't want it to be easy. You have to really plan for it. And just like in the real world, if somebody decides to put town after town after town or city after city after city, there's got to be infrastructure to support it. There's got to be roads. There's got to be sewer. It's the same kind of process. You really have to plan for that. And the abstract in these games is happiness or health in Beyond Earth. It's definitely a builder game. You have to think about it. We don't want there to ever be a set mechanic that is just the one way to play if you're going to go wide. Long answer.
As an Alpha Centauri player from way back in the day, I really liked that interview because the Dutch guy that was asking those really long, drawn-out questions, almost all of his questions were, back in Alpha Centauri, you could do X. Can you do X in Beyond Earth? And if so, great. And if not, why not? And there were two nuggets from that. One was, it doesn't look like advanced terraforming where you raise and lower stuff is supported by the engine.
I think it's one of those things that we would have liked to put something in. This is obviously the first iteration of the game, so we stretch our legs, especially with the Civ 5 engine. We stretched the engine pretty far from where it began back in 2007 when we first originally started it. There's definitely things that we want to see improvements done in the engine. One of them is terraforming. We'd love the ability to continue to create terrain. We'd love that ability for Civilization series as well. So while we don't have it yet, I'm sure that's something that we'll see in the future. I think it's something that the players would love the flexibility to have. The one advantage that Alpha Centauri had was that the engine was very simple, it was very flat, it was very easy to introduce terrain. When you've got an engine that's actually forming the terrain so it all looks organic and perfect, actually plopping territory down, we experimented with some different options, it just didn't mesh very well, it didn't feel right. So we didn't feel like introducing into the game if it's going to break the immersion.
But for all intents and purposes, they said that there will be a DLC with Sea Cities.
Just a limitation of the engine, or if there's another underlying reason for that?
There is not a limitation of the engine, but I'm also not yet going to talk about future plans. So you'll just have to leave that hanging. It's something that is very doable.
So did we just actually trigger a DLC
You triggered nothing.
Okay, I triggered nothing.
I say nothing.
Okay.
My lips are sealed.
Okay.
Basically, if you read between the lines, that's what he said. That's what he said.
Are you sure?
Yes.
We were just wondering if maybe the reason was that this would detract from the element that different coastlines and continental shapes would actually be important to the game, because if you can build on sea and land,
You
can just plop up a grid of cities and there's not much difference anymore between sea and land.
Yeah. I'm joking around about it a little bit now. You guys are obviously talking about potential features, things like that. There's no limitation in the engine that stops us from doing it.
Okay.
I think it would be something cool that would add to gameplay. It's just one of those things where you never know what the future is going to hold.
Okay.
All of a sudden, he's like, I cannot confirm nor deny. I can't say anything. When he was asked about the terraform, he's like, well, we were thinking about it. And yeah, the engine didn't quite do it. There's some stuff for their people with the mods. And then he's asked about building cities in the ocean. He's like, I can't talk about that. Let's just move on. So I'm just kind of assuming that, yes, sea cities for first, maybe second DLC.
As an Alpha Centauri player, and it sounds like someone who enjoyed the ability to construct a cities in the sea, that your inference is that he's saying that they're going to be in the DLC without him actually saying it. Whereas some other people are going to take that as, yeah, that was a no, but he just didn't want to crush your hopes and dreams too soon.
Possibly. Possibly.
And you never know what could happen in the future.
Possibly. It was tough because I'll tell you, in Alpha Centauri, they were not balanced. And so I think for game balance purposes, it's tricky to figure that stuff out. But when I saw that interview, I have to say that it really looked like it's going to happen in the future. But that's my take, we'll see.
And even if it doesn't officially, I'm certain there'll be someone that will mod it. Or try to, anyway.
Civilization, just the way that Sid designed it back on the first one, has limitless possibilities. There is so many shenanigans in the history of the human race to pull from in terms of ideas of game mechanics and possibilities and civilization traits. It's an empty well. And whether it's Ed Beach with all the designs that he did on Civilization V and then the two expansions, we actually had a chance to stretch our legs and make it a little more hardcore because people already knew how to play and understand the game. Beyond Earth offers the same thing, but for a slightly different reason. Because we're now beyond the normal age of where we exist as humanity, you can just make things up. All grounded in science, but you can still make up many possibilities. But in terms of game mechanics, we just can never run out of ideas. There's always going to be something that we want to do to pull the franchise forward in a big way. So I think each iteration offers us the possibility of making that step.
I heard that one of the Firaxis philosophies for Civilization is for each new game, you take out 30% of the old, keep 30% and put in 30% new.
Yes.
Is that the same thing for Civilization Beyond Earth?
Yes, that is always consistent. The 30% old, we actually tagged straight to Civilization V players being able to pick it up and play. And we'll start introducing those new systems as you start playing. The payoff in terms of the depth, the new gameplay, that's all just as rich as any other new game that we've ever produced.
Speaking about mods, one of these guys got to talk to Lena Brink, who's the producer for Beyond Earth, and they were talking about the map and what it looks like. It looks very similar to Civ 5 style maps because it's using very similar engine. And the interviewer was trying to push to see, you know, why isn't it completely more alien than Earth? Because if we're going to go out to the stars, we're going to look for the weirdest looking freaking planet and try and land there rather than going out to the stars and looking for something that actually might support our life.
No, that sounds boring.
A little bit of the science in the science fiction set. Lena mentioned that there's some hardwired into human to show actual gameplay issues. Basically, we've all been trained across Civ that green is fertile. So when you start messing with the color palette on the planets, if it wasn't green or it was completely different colors, you had to stop and check every hex to see, okay, this is fertile, this is like plains, this is desert, but they're all different colors. They were saying that it was getting to the point that was slowing down gameplay because people were just too confused at the various color palettes.
Kudos to gameplay designer Anton Stringer for trying to change the topic a little bit, because he's like, oh, we've got this one map, it's half covered in ice, and the story with that is that the rotational axis of the planet is oriented differently from most planets. There's some cool stuff, quote unquote, and I'm like, cool stuff? Ice? Really? Okay.
Sure. Let's go with it.
I'd go with that anyway. But in the comments on this article on Games on Net, yeah, people did not comment on what Stringer had to say. Only Alex Walker was like, satisfying answer that. Andre Axum is like, what a load of toss. Whoa. But I think the best response was from Kinky Kel...
Who has a Kerbal Space Program avatar?
Yeah. It says, I get why they've done it, but here's their chance to train people to get used to your alien worlds. It'll only take one whole game before people figure out what's fertile and what isn't. Our minds are pretty versatile like that. I would have preferred them go hog wild with the environments, and then I could have had the fun of discovery. Once people were used to your new world, the opportunities with your expansions would really be fun and interesting. Feels semi-cop-out to me, but to be honest, it looks like a Civ 5 mod at the moment. And quite honestly, I gotta believe, given what Brink had to say in terms of people being confused, that was a marketing decision. We want to be able to sell this game, and if there are too many people going to be confused, then they're going to be turned off, and then they're going to play something else. A lot of people just aren't going to devote the time to figure this out, and yes, we want our existing Civ player base to come over to the game, but unfortunately, there are a lot of gamers that don't play Civ. The number of people who are gamers that don't play Civ, unfortunately, is still significantly less than those who do, and they want to sell games.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite obviously probably marketing pushing that sort of thing. They probably did some sort of focus group with people who've never seen Civ and said, what's fertile? And people went, what do you mean, what's fertile? Oh, I guess they mean green isn't fertile. And in the end, there is going to be different colors of the map types still. It's not like they're just going to use the Civ 5 colors for all the maps. Basically, they couldn't go too goofy, otherwise people wouldn't recognize it.
I don't know that I feel that deprived that farms aren't blue and the ocean isn't pink.
Yeah. Yeah, changing the color just for the shits and giggles of it.
Yeah, this is a world that can support Earth plants. The idea that you shouldn't have greenish farms or whatnot, I don't know. It seems to be a little harsh.
And hey, you got canyons. You don't have those on Earth. There's not a single canyon on Earth.
There isn't a grand one or anything.
Yeah. Hey, man.
Early on, one of the videos that was just released was with the fungal biome as opposed to lush or dry. And everything is purple. I mean, it looks cool. I guess you could say it's not alien enough if you just wanted to be a devil's advocate or a cynic. To me, this was alien enough. I'm fine with the purple. I don't need more purple than what was there.
Well, and everything's relative too, right? There's your alien world. You're not happy with the other ones that look too Earth-like? Then start with that.
So, hey, France, Brave New World. We're back at Mega Bear's Fan again. Yeah, his title for this is Napoleon Springs, France's Tourist Trap Upon the Brave New World. Because it changed a bit from the base game. They changed the unique to the City of Light, which meant that all the museum and World Wonder theming bonuses were doubled in the capital. Which, that's just crazy, and this is why you see France run away with culture now. I mean, not that they couldn't already, but this is just, like, even stupid worse. But it only applies to the tourism generated by the theming bonus and not to all the sources, so it's not as bad as it could have been.
I do not play culture games, so I've got to be honest, I have little to say on this topic.
What?
I hate the culture game. I agree it's better than what it was. Don't get me wrong, but I still don't like it. I'm too much of a warmonger. And or on occasion, science diplomacy. But the culture thing, I just can't get there. For me, culture is something that I use to help me warmonger more.
So we know you're not playing Franco-Iberia when we play Beyond Earth. The chateau, we have to get to chivalry, and you can only build it in your territory. Isn't that kind of obvious? Would you build a chateau in Germany?
That would be awesome.
Chivalry technology. Here's the problem that people have. At least we can't spam them. They have to be adjacent to a luxury resource and also not adjacent to another chateau. So even if you've got a luxury resource, you can only get three around it. If you have enough luxury resources, you could carpet a lot of places with chateaus, but you might have better things to do with those tiles, like if it was a river tile or something. On that tile, it will give you plus one gold, plus two culture, and a 50% defensive bonus to units. So it's a mini fort, basically.
Interesting.
And another culture and two more gold after researching flight. He's pointing out it could well be one of the strongest unique improvements in the game, and it is pretty strong. Yeah. Brazil would camp and the Dutch polders come in a little bit earlier, or peak much earlier, because you don't get the full effect of the chateau until you hit flight, even though you can start building them at chivalry. Even before adding the extra from flight, it's still pretty nice. That ends up being a plus three once you have flight. It's like, do you not want more stuff on your tiles?
I think it is one of the stronger ones, although I think Portugal,
yeah.
Under the city-states, I can't think of the name.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Vitória.
Fatoria, thank you. I think the Fatoria is stronger only because its full effects can be realized earlier in-game. Even if you're playing France, and even if you're not going for culture, don't be like, oh, I don't want to construct these because I'm not going for culture. Yeah, absolutely. Like Mackie said, they're also very good for defense. So that can be very good for putting yourself on even just defense in your territory, but can also be used well for offense as well if people are coming in and trying to take your stuff. I think what the Chateau and his Mega Bear fan points out, be careful where you settle cities to think a little longer term in terms of if I settle here and it's beside a luxury resource, that I'm not going to be able to construct a chateau because there's a city right there.
Yeah, you might want to shift one more tile over just so you have room for an extra chateau.
It's true, but I mean, on the other hand, you know, for at the start of the game, you know you're not getting your chateaus until turn 100 plus. Sometimes it's a really good idea to settle on a luxury if you can, because you're immediately getting that 3 gold a turn from turn 1 plus an improved lux once you develop calendar or whatever it is. So it's one of those 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other sorts of things. Do you sacrifice a chateau on turn 120 so that you can get an immediate benefit from turn 1?
That's true. And certainly the new unique ability that Macari talked about, the City of Light and the Chateau. I hate this word, but I'm going to use it because people understand it, even through gritted teeth. There's very good synergy.
Ooh.
City of Light and the Chateau. But the Musketeer, I'm just kind of like, oh, it's not a downfall of France, but it's just kind of, let's not talk about it too much.
It's a flavor thing.
Musketeers are still good.
But they're not great.
Well, sure, but
they're slightly stronger, which is nice.
And a standard musketman, yeah, that's true. That's about the end of it.
Yes, but also you're playing France. Why would you not have musketeers?
Yeah.
Those nice hats.
Exactly.
Oh, so you're going to be able to scare your opponents off with fashion. Okay.
Well, you're France. Hello.
Whoa, Mac.
No, they will bow before the greatness of your fashion.
Musketeers and cannons. That's all you need.
Musketeers, you definitely can. Of course, obviously, if you are in a single-player game and you decide to pick France, you're probably going for culture. You're probably not going to go warmonger.
Although it feels awkward to be leading a nation whose leader is Napoleon and not go conquer everything. I'm sorry.
I know. That's just odd. I know. It's not that you can't warmonger with France. It's just it's so pointed towards culture, and they gave us Napoleon. It's like, guys, I think you missed something here.
No, I think what's happening is you're conquering with culture as opposed to...
original style.
Exactly. Yeah. You see, Mackie, this is what we call highbrow conquering, yeah. As opposed to lowbrow.
Oh, I see.
Mega Bear fan gets into, and he starts alluding to, is that to fill up the Hermitage and all the other massive wonders and all the other multi-gritwork slot wonders in your capital, because that's where you're going to build them all, go kick somebody's butt and steal theirs.
Yeah, don't wait for archaeology to start collecting.
Yeah, go take everybody else's. Then you'll be pumping out even more tourism because you'll be stealing great works as you go.
I'm pretty sure there are things that are not French in the Louvre.
Yeah, well.
French now.
Well, and more luxes to build chateaus next to, which is never a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the synergy bonuses for the great works require other people's stuff. So you can either try and trade or you can just go take them if they don't want to trade.
I will say one thing that doesn't synergize, which always makes France a little bit painful for me, is that you get a lot of tourism from hotels and airports and eventually tourist center, and those don't apply to the theming bonuses. You often need those for your tourism culture victory. Unless you're playing an easy difficulty level or whatnot, you're probably not winning a tourism victory really early on, and you're getting hotels and airports and whatnot.
You just definitely need the hotels and the airports and that to get a culture victory anyways. Because if you could win it early, then the AI would probably accidentally win it early and people would rage.
More than they do already.
Yeah. For game pacing purposes, it's fine.
As far as policy goes, to me, that's kind of obvious. You would probably want tradition with France. He does point out that liberty is good if you wanted to get out and spread out earlier so you could build more chateaus later if you're playing a longer game.
Well, yeah, France is different because not only did it get me to use the word synergy, but when Mega Bear as fan talks about, consider opening aesthetics as your second policy tree.
Yes.
Yeah, as much as it pains me to say, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, you can consider opening it, but I wouldn't consider finishing it as like a second full policy. The great artist in aesthetics that you get for free, that you should leave for a point where you're ripping through the tech tree, and when you need an extra artist for one of those wonders to get the combination bonus, that's when you pop it. Normally in the Renaissance, you can just rip right through it, and getting the two great works of art from the same civ and same era can be a problem if you're not really pushing them out. And so therefore you might accidentally flip through the Renaissance in one shot very, very quickly and not have that bonus. So you can always hold that great artist for a period of time where you're like, okay, now I need to take this so that I can go to the next era.
I think it's a bit of a cliche, but I think we all know that a culture victory is a science victory in a lot of ways, especially with France. You're not building chateaus until you get to chivalry. So don't wait until turn 180 and you've built seven cities and taken your time until you get to chivalry. You need hotels to have those chateaus turn into suitcases.
Wait, you were waiting till turn 180 to get to chivalry?
No, I'm not. But I'm saying that if you go with a liberty strategy where you're trying to spread out as much as possible so you can build as many chateaus as possible and so on, because you're not getting a lot of these perks with France until later, your first 100 turns in a lot of ways should be like your first 100 turns in a lot of tradition-based games where you're trying to grow big, get an early national college, and get your science up as much as possible. It's boring, but I think it's true, especially for France.
The only difference here is that you want to add guilds at the same time, all three guilds up and running as quickly as possible, which generally means that's why you want to go tradition, so you can get those growth bonuses and the free aqueduct as quickly as possible.
It's an interesting question, though, and I don't know what the answer is. That your first great writer, are you going to plant it so you can get some early culture suitcases, or are you going to pop it so you can open rationalism eight turns earlier? Because science, I would probably still do the latter, but I don't know.
No, you throw them into a great work. All great people need to go into great works as quickly as possible, so you start building that base of tourism. Otherwise, the bonuses for France in their capital won't give you any bonuses.
Yeah,
the first thing he's pointing out here is to get the great library and then get your writer's guild up as fast as possible so you can put your two works right in there from the top.
Yeah, you want to get those in as quickly as possible. Science, you definitely want to get into, but if you're going culture with France, then aesthetics, you do want to at least open. And that's the thing, you want to get in there quicker because you can get the policy for generating more great artists, writers, and musicians quicker. And that way you plow through them much, much faster.
Yeah, he's actually got a list down here of maximizing the themes in there, which also includes the aesthetics finisher once you get to that point.
Yeah. You can ignore the aesthetics finisher for a little bit if you need to go into rationalism to get your science.
Yes. But you'll be like, everything but done, and just be ready to pop it at the last minute. And then all of a sudden, hey, double for everything.
Plus, you do sort of have to wait for people to get into the industrial era before you can start really hurting them with your tourism. If they don't have an ideology, then you're not really doing nearly as much damage to them. With all the changes to tourism versus culture and the different levels where you get abilities to take more population sooner when you're taking over to other people's cities, you still want to push as much tourism as possible early rather than pop for the extra culture. That way, if you are going domination with France, then you still want to fill Paris with all the possible bonuses for great works and theming just so that you can make the other side of the game that you're trying for easier.
Yeah, there's a little bit of mention about education, you know, because Leaning Tower of Pisa, because then you can start getting the artists faster and everybody else faster, too. Mm-hmm. Arts funding resolution. And of course, you want to get things like Oxford. And this is like things that you would do normally, except for the arts funding. Mm-hmm. But also the Hermitage. Got to have the Hermitage.
Yeah, going education to acoustics is one of those must do as quickly mm-hmm. as possible plans rather than swinging wide to go back to printing press after education. You really do want to hit the Renaissance relatively quickly, because if you haven't popped a great artist or too many great writers right away, then at least if you get into the Renaissance very, very quickly through acoustics, you can keep boosting your culture, get the extra wonder there, and all of your great people will be Renaissance until you plow through the other side, grabbing all the guilds and up through printing press, etc.
Yeah, to go backwards a little bit into religion, actually. You know, normally we all like to pick things like pagodas or mosques, but this is one of the ones where you pick cathedrals because they can hold those extra little bits. And he's pointing out that kind of they're a storage unit until you have the bigger wonders to stick them in. But, you know, you still get some extra stuff.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of cathedrals for that purpose, because at some point, unless you're dominating the world and taking everybody's stuff, you're going to run out of bonuses. I mean, yes, the cathedral in your capital will definitely allow for even more tourism because of the bonuses, but mass spam of cathedrals across your empire, you're not filling most of them, so you're going to get a little less culture than you normally would. I'd almost say just stick with the pagodas, almost, except for the whole cathedral in your capital thing.
Yes, there's also, I didn't know we had this in there, a belief called religious art, which is going to add a tourism boost to the Hermitage. +5 tourism, +5 culture. I guess I've never considered that, or I just blank it out when I'm looking at the list of things to pick.
Yeah, I like that one a lot, actually. If I'm doing culture with Polynesia and I get to open a religion, I almost always take that as my second one because, hey, suitcases. I'm not big on cathedrals, especially if you manage to build Sistine, you're going to have enough room for your early great artists, probably. So I don't know that the cathedrals are necessarily worth it, because they cost faith, too.
Yeah, and I was thinking that you get a better balance off of pagodas anyway.
Yeah, it just sort of depends on how you plan on dealing with your religion. Like, if you're doing your religion just for yourself, then sure, maybe cathedrals and stuff like that. And then if your neighbors all have religions, then you're not really going to push it very hard. But if your neighbors don't necessarily have religion, then maybe you want to go for things like religious art and some other stuff that helps you background boost while you spend all your faith on the missionaries to push it out there. Kind of one of those important things that he does mention, the world religion for the World Congress. That's much easier to pass if your religion is in multiple other civs. And yes, obviously making your holy city Paris would be a good plan.
Yes. It's kind of going to work out like that anyway if you're starting religion pretty early. But also in the Congress, hey, there's always international games because you get that double tourism bonus for 20 turns.
Yeah, the games and the other spend a bunch of hammers into a world project stuff. Even though some come early, you sort of want to ignore them until you have a strong base, like even the plus culture.
Yeah, he's suggesting here to wait till you get hotels and maybe also the National Visitor Center.
Yeah, because if you're going to get a big boost for winning it, then you might as well wait till you have a large base of yield from it before you actually do that. Doing it as quickly as possible just means that you're going to end up losing out on what you could possibly get. And of course, if people are holding out, bomb them with great magicians or nukes. Either way, it works. If they don't exist, they can't complain.
Give a nuke to your great musician, and when he sneaks over the border, it doesn't work that way, does it? That's too bad. Maybe in Civ 6.
Well, he does point out that all the methods you're using can easily get you into diplomatic victory and scientific victory, but hey, you know, you could always go the real Napoleon route and just squish.
Autocratic culture victory looks a lot like a standard domination victory, except that at some point people flip to your ideology and you win.
Yeah. Don't get squished by France, culturally or physically.
Well, then the question becomes, how do you counter France? Which is also covered in the article.
Don't let them take all your stuff.
Take their stuff instead.
Yeah, since they really kind of kick into high gear in the later game, don't let them get to the later game.
Right. It's like when you see other people and we see Monty and we see Genghis, we automatically know to go kill them because we don't want them to live long enough to get shinier units. Don't let France and Napoleon live long enough to get shinier wonders.
Now, if you're out there listening and thinking, but Dan, just disable cultural victory. Well, I appreciate your trolling.
Turning off time victory is one thing, but...
I like MegaBearer's fan comment that, quote, from my experience, Napoleon is pretty loyal, assuming that you maintain a decent army, unquote.
Yeah.
An interesting definition of loyal, but okay.
I won't attack you if I don't think I could take you. But the minute I think I could take you, you're so toast, and all your shinies are now belong to me.
Does differentiate him from some AI, though.
Yeah. As long as he doesn't think that he can roll you, he'll be your friend, and he'll help you.
As opposed to the guys that always attack you, or never do.
And he can also be a pretty good trading partner as well. So he may not be your first opponent, but the thing is we're getting at, if you're competing against him, you don't want him to either get to the point that he can start really, you know, racking up the chateaus and the theming bonuses, et cetera, or at the very least be prepared to knock him down when he gets to that point, and maybe up to that point if you've got more immediate problems on your border. Shaka, Monty,
Gang.
Then, hey, want to trade?
Want to be buddies?
Thanks, Nappy. Recorded for episode 207 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Madjin, and Fabio 1701.
I found that the article discovering Firaxis actually quite interesting, and if you're just too lazy to read, the pictures are pretty cool too. Long Henry. But besides a number of things that they mentioned about how awesome it is to work there and how everyone is respected and that your colleagues are always good friends, and this so is not like my office, that you...
Or anybody's office.
There's two things which really stuck out for me, which I think is worth delving into discussion more. One is Sid Meier's rule, which they apparently still adhere to, 33% new, 33% improvements, and 33% retained games.
We talked about that on Polycast long before this article came out. So
I think they listened to your Polycast, and then they wrote the article.
Yep, that's how they knew. They never talked to Dennis Shirk at all. That they just made up that quote, clearly.
They seem to really talk a lot about this, and I'm thinking, well, it's pretty cool, but is it really what's happening? I'm seeing indeed some things which are retained, but some things coming back, and there should be actually, it should be a 25% split. It should be another category of 25% stuff from old Civ games which we've reintroduced after dropping for a while, like spies putting nukes in cities.
Yeah, what's old is new again.
Yeah, so it should be 25, 25, 25, 25.
Sure, why not? We'll just randomly make up new numbers.
Well, the article talks about that Civ has a clear flow now with fleshed out mid and endgame systems and Dennis Shirk, producer, by the way, of Firaxis. I admit that it represented something of change in the direction for the series. So maybe in that respect, yeah, what they're defining as new and improvements and retaining, like when you say retained, does it have to be directly from the most previous iteration? When we talk about that, it seems to imply that, of course, the 33-33-33 also extends from a vanilla game to its expansion packs as well. And then, of course, then there's the question of, and the comparisons come up to Civilization IV Colonization. It's like, yeah, okay, Civilization IV Colonization used the Civ IV engine, and Civilization Beyond Earth is using the Civ V engine, but beyond that, it's not on the same scale or degree or anything. I think that's also something to take into account. And Shirk says, I've always argued that what we do with Civ has to feel of a board game with rules, abilities, and interactions that would translate well to tabletop. The mechanics of the game are manageable and relatively simple to parse. We're a strategy game, not a simulation. This isn't Crusader Kings. Oh.
Oh, so close. He should have said EU4. Crusader Kings actually has fun things to do.
I like when Adam Smith asks Anton Stranger, who is the systems designer for Beyond Earth, will Beyond Earth mess with Civ veterans' heads? We use similar systems in ways that are occasionally unfamiliar, and we introduce a rule we often break it later in the game. So Smith says, this was a diplomatic phrase of saying yes.
Yes, y'all gonna be confused.
He also says Beyond Earth is busier from the very beginning. New systems are introduced later on, but there are more things available from turn one, which allows us to build on those systems rather than simply introducing new ones. And I think, yeah, well, this is set in the future, not in the distant past, so...
I should hope so.
Not all of Civ V's features have survived the transition. Stranger says religion went through several wardrobe changes before being dropped. Oh, guess it had a wardrobe malfunction. But that the ones that are there will grow along with each campaign. We could not quite get Firaxis when they were on episode 200 in May to either confirm nor deny a religion's existence. It seemed to imply that it wasn't, and I don't know if this was the first article that confirmed, at least claims to confirm from Firaxis. Oh, talk about being paranoid. That religion is not in the game, but there you go.
I must say I do appreciate Firaxis as a development team trying to say, okay, you know what? Let's see what we can do with this. And then taking the bold move of saying, you know what? We cannot do anything with this. We're going to axe it rather than have a crappy part of the game. Not other development studios would do that. Some would just say, this is just going to be in there because it was in there before and it has no use. And they would let the game be less good because of that. And religion is popular with some players. It's some players think it's like the core reason they play Civ. It's for them the fun part. And so it's bold to say, you know what, we just could not make it fit, so it's not going to be there.
I can't remember who said it exactly or in what context, but I believe it was in the context of Civ, where someone made the comment that you know a game is finished not when there are more things to add, but there are no more things to take away.
Hmm.
Yes, that had been said, I think, by Ed Beach. Maybe Dennis.
If you bring it to comparisons of Smack, which this game obviously has no relation to, that in the future, ideology has replaced religion, and there is one faction who religion is one of the ideologies, kind of an amalgamation of everyone who still holds to faith. That's just put into here, which is kind of realistic, because as more people give up their faiths, the last people will say, hey, we're the last couple of guys who have some faith, let's work together to survive.
If you're thinking, oh, what's with all this Beyond Earth stuff, or how can I possibly bide my time until Beyond Earth is set to be released on the 24th of October, apparently there are 5 things you can do with Civ 5. I don't know, to keep things interesting while you wait.
Oh, you mean that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that.
Or you could read a book.
Yeah.
Stop trying to improve your life. Do not improve yourself. Stop it. Play more games.
There's this article talking about Civ 5 will be 4 years old this September. I've already poured hundreds of hours. Really? I did that in like the first couple of weeks. Perhaps you should try to, you know, you could try out some of the cool mods in Steam Workshop. There you go. Of his 5 things, he didn't actually order this like number 5, number 4.
No, he did not.
I'm going to assume he starts at number 5 and works to number 1 because that's what people do.
Yeah.
So embrace advanced setup is his first step. And frankly, if you've never seen what the advanced setup screen looks like, then there's something weird going on, because you probably should have seen it before now.
This first tip of the writer saying, try this out, this first tip makes me think, has the writer actually played the game? Because when I install Civ, be it Civ 5 or Civ going back ages to number 2 when I figured out how to play Civ properly, since I didn't figure out Civ 1 properly enough, I have not started a game without entering the advanced setup. I load up the game and I click on advanced setup first.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone who does not.
Well, there's probably a huge volume, probably about at least 50% of the players who don't go tingle with the advanced start. I would presume closer to 70%, actually, of the players don't.
Really?
Yeah. Well, and then,
because there's no point. Like, for
how do you 90%, turn on Raging Barbarians?
Yeah, well, most people probably wouldn't turn on Raging Barbarians.
How do you see different maps?
Yeah, how do you select different maps?
In the current version of the game, you can select different maps in the main menu.
But the things that pull up in that start don't include the entire list of maps.
Actually includes most of them now.
Well, does it? All right. It's probably because I can't start all the time. I haven't
looked at it. It's even categorized.
What?
If this had been more, to me, of 5 ways to keep Civ 5 interesting while you wait for BE full stop, then okay. But given his preface about, oh, you've already poured a couple hundred hours into the game, here's how to keep things fresh. Maybe rather than saying embrace advanced setup, you might have been better to say return, try more options in advanced setup or something. Like it just,
you know, embrace the things that you wouldn't normally change in advanced setup. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Allow for a lush for the strategic resources. You can make them very sparse or you can make them abundant, or the age of the planets or how the water level is. There's a lot of little tinkering stuff in there that you can do to change the game without
disable start bias. And now you're Venice.
Yeah. Enjoy.
No.
Okay, number 4, join a multiplayer community. So there's a No Quit Civ, Civilization No Quitters. Basically, it's a multiplayer group that the whole point is you don't quit your game. If you're going to rage quit or anything silly like that, you actually have to try and finish your game, because constantly rage quitting players just makes it boring. Then there is actual stuff like Giant Multiplayer Robot, which we've talked about before. The big thing about GMR is that you can play the scenario games with people. It's not a live play against other humans in scenario games, but at least you're shuttling back and forth and you're taking turns and you're playing multiplayer scenarios. And that's the biggest draw for me for GMR.
I would just add Civilization players to this list as well, even though it's not listed.
Yeah, I don't know why. Play a succession game on the CFC Succession Game Forum. Succession game. Effectively, you play some time, you give it to somebody else, they play some time, and it goes potentially around the ring. And of course, try challenge of the month. Basically, CFC has game of the month plus the Hall of Fame. r/Civ on Reddit. Basically, somebody pops out a scenario or a map. CFC does it better because they actually write code to make sure people don't cheat. And you basically just play whatever the single player competitive versus others.
Yeah, I think to me, Civ Fanatics, it's more about the quality of the participation as opposed to the quantity that Reddit presents.
Yeah, And not to mention CFC, they talk about the maps and stuff, so you'll actually learn more. If you're trying to learn a bit more of the CFC side, is better, because since everybody's playing the same map and they eventually talk about what they did while they played that map and you tried that map, then it actually makes sense. It's kind of like way back in the day when Apolliton used to have the Apolliton U.
Oh, yes, Bolton University. Yep.
Yeah, way back.
Yeah, we talked about that back in the days on Polycast. Man, oh man, we are old.
You are old. I didn't even know you back then. Although I think I actually talked to Mackie on that. I think Mackie was using it.
I am old because you didn't talk to me back then. Yep. Now there's an argument. I tell you what. Okay.
Moving on.
Sure.
We get to explore scenarios as one.
You know, explore scenarios. Like, why not just explore mods?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Why?
No, because it talks about that you've already explored mods. So
I would challenge that, because I explored scenarios way before I explored mods. Because a single player is going to go, like, I'm playing by myself. I'm not interested in the world of the internet. Oh, I've played Civ a lot. What are these scenarios? I'll try that. Before they go into the Steam Workshop, you would definitely play scenarios before mods.
Well, especially since Steam Workshop wasn't around until more recently.
Yeah. This is backwards.
Anyways, go play some scenarios. Some of the scenarios are really good for replayability, like Empire of the Smoky Skies. Others, you play once and you're done, like the 1066, Your Viking Destiny. And at -1, what's old is new again. On a list of 5, -1, what's old is new again. Armed with these ideas, you'll find hundreds of extra hours of fun to play in Civ 5. Eh, maybe. But perhaps when you're finished, you'll have truly seen it all. Probably not. Luckily for you, Civ Beyond Earth is right around the corner, and your autumn is sure to be filled with a whole new planet of adventures, only if you move there. You could always go watch somebody else play. That apparently a thing to do.
You know, there is also an argument to be said of just, you know what, you're going to enjoy CBE a lot more if you give yourself a bit of a Civ break, and then you're going to be, like, really into hunkering for some Civ and, like, oh, I've got total withdrawal, and then go into CBE, and you'll get a much, much nicer fix.
Yeah. There are other games out there, apparently.
There you go. How to keep Civ interesting. I wait for Beyond Earth to come out.
Play something else.
Get older, forget stuff.
Get old and forget.
Why wasn't that #1?
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
On August 13th, Civilization II Revolution was released for Android.
Does that include Kindle? Because my mom would probably play it.
No Kindle for you.
Aww.
I'm going to have to talk to her as to why she didn't raise you to be a Supremacy faction player. This is going to be an important
because
discussion.
She would probably also play Harmony and Hug the Aliens?
As far as you know.
Yeah, pretty much, as far as I know.
Look, Phil and Mackie, I like both of you. So since you like Supremacy, Phil, and Mackie likes Harmony, clearly I'm going to have to go Purity because it's the best of both worlds. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Mackie,
now.
Dogpile on Dan?
Yeah, Dogpile on Dan.
Awesome. It might be the worst of both worlds. I don't know.
Absolutely not, Kyle. Why would you say something like that? That is a socially irresponsible statement.
Well, because you don't get cyborg implants and get to live forever, and you also don't get to merge with a planet intelligence and become one with the universe. Instead,
stop trying to have sex with the planet.
Basically, he just got he also got the memo to dogpile on Dan. That's all there is, really.
Now somebody needs to make a mod with a pink planet, and the aliens are replaced with, like, Teletubbies.
Oh God!
Oh no!
Putting it out there.
No!
Do it, people.
Furbies, My Little Ponies, the whole works. Yeah. Everything.
Kyle, I gotta tell you, that was a socially irresponsible statement.
Crap. Somebody will probably go try and do that.
Well, thanks for the invite. This was awesome. You kids with your podcast, I have to say, I think I have to start 2 or 3 of these myself. This was episode 208 with Kyle, the Grumpy Buddha. Mad Jin.
Back for more coffee, round 2.
Dan Q.
Watching you watch me.
Maki.
I have things to nuke.
And Phil.
Till the hunt. The hunt.
I'll be over here in the corner sleeping with my coffee.
Do you really want to end up wearing that?
Wait, I'm sorry. You're going to sleep with your coffee? You're married.
It's a very warm feeling.
It's a coffee.
So we've been wondering if Civilization Beyond Earth is the love child of Alpha Centauri and Civilization 5.
Love child?
Okay, the child.
That'll be the first time.
Okay, I just say the offspring.
Polynesia. You can build heads in another person's territory.
Oh, really?
And that's just one of the 17 different ways Polynesia is better than France, but that's really not the topic. I'm not going to say that. To play Civ 1 on her 386, because on my 286, it was just so slow. We've come so far.
Record date August 16th, 2014. Civilization Beyond Earth Gamescom clips copyright Alliance Network and Writing Bull. Livestream clips copyright Firaxis Games. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.